think we're on the run.
And welcome to another episode of the Dad's Army Podcast.
We are the boys who will make you think again.
This is podcast number 27, and yes, I'm afraid it's been a very long time since podcast 26. As I said before, and if you're a reader of the blog, you'll know exactly why I haven't had an opportunity to record another podcast. I still really haven't got time, to be honest with you. My wife is about to give birth. I mean, it's imminent. Every time my phone rings, I jump about 3 feet in the air. So this is very much the calm before the storm, and I thought I'd do something rather than worry, so I thought I'd record a new podcast.
You're listening to the Dad's Army Podcast with your host, James.
I finally had the opportunity to record just a few minutes worth of my thoughts about the Jonathan Ross programme, and I've also mentioned the Comedy Connections programme that was broadcast on BBC One and BBC Two about 2 or 3 weeks or so ago now, and in my view was considerably better than Jonathan Ross's effort, but more of that later on. I'm afraid, again, I'm not going to have time to go through all of the feedback, and I think what this is leading to is when I do get round to recording a proper podcast, it will consist mainly of listener feedback, and I've got no problem with that. I think that's great. It's always wonderful to hear emails and messages sent in from our listeners, and we've got emails dating back a couple of months now. So if you're still very keen to hear your message, or you'd like a question or so answered or addressed, and I haven't done so yet, then keep subscribed to iTunes, keep subscribed to the podcast on the podcast page, and we will get round to it. In the meantime, if you'd like to make things a little bit easier and make podcast production that much more regular, then perhaps you'd like to make a recording of some of your thoughts about Dad's Army. It can be about absolutely any aspect of the show whatsoever. If you can make an MP3 or any kind of recording on the computer, then I should be able to access it and use it. You could talk about a particular episode, you can talk about the recent press coverage and media attention the programme has received, anything at all whatsoever, and it's considerably easier for me than just to do a small bit of editing and put your recording into the show. Anyway, what have we got coming up for you over the next half an hour or so? Well, as I mentioned, we've got a brief review of the programmes celebrating the 40th anniversary of the show. We then hand over to Paul and Tony from the Dad's Army Appreciation Society for a very special review of Is There Honey Still for Tea, which is the Season 8 episode, where Godfrey receives notification that his cottage has got to be demolished to make way for an aerodrome.
Here is the news, and this is John Snagg reading it.
Now, those of you who subscribe to the podcast will be aware that Eric Longworth passed away about a month or so ago now. I put out a very brief recording just to let people know. Paul Carpenter from the Dad's Army Appreciation Society attended Eric's funeral on the 5th and has sent me an email, which I'm going to read to you. Paul starts, "It was a grey day and raining when we gathered at Guildford's crematorium on Friday the 5th of September. Being a long-time Guildfordian, it was his wish for the event to be held in the town which he loved. After a short service, it was a quick trip into Guildford for the memorial service held at the church where he spent much of his time. Eric had been very much involved with the church from the days when it was next door to the theatre. He would be seen on the stage or about the theatre during the week and greet the congregation at the door of the church on Sundays. The symmetry was noted. Eric leaves 4 sons, all of whom bear a resemblance to our town clerk. In fact, Stephen, who was Eric's second son, had to reassure those present that they hadn't been drawn together under false pretences and he was not, in fact, Eric. Stephen spoke about where his father grew up and how he came to be in the acting profession and how much he loved doing it. Although it was hard work doing weekly rep when he was at Guildford, Eric had performed in over 800 plays. They had the programmes to prove it. Bill Pertwee was asked to do a reading, and he preceded this with some personal words and memories of Eric. It was also nice to see Frank Williams there, along with Ronnie Grange and Bernard Cribbins. It was evident that Eric left behind a large and loving family, as well as many friends who appreciated that he lived a full and happy life, always thinking of others. The term, a true gentleman, could have been termed just for him." Thank you very much, Paul, for sending in your summary of Eric's funeral there. And yes, it's very sad, but it's also good to know that Eric enjoyed his profession. He over 800 plays, that's quite incredible, and obviously he'll be remembered for a very long time as Claude Gordon, the town clerk in Dad's Army. many of you have emailed me in and asked me what I think of the Jonathan Ross show that was broadcast at the beginning of August to celebrate the 40th anniversary. Well, my reaction is mixed, really. Yes, I'm very, very pleased that such a program was recorded, and it's fantastic to see all of the actors, Jimmy and David, on primetime TV once again, and I think that's fantastic. However, I couldn't help but feel a little bit disappointed that there wasn't more time given to listening to the actors, and I realised that to the casual viewer rather than the rabid Dad's Army fan, I guess watching a lot of old men on television is not going to be particularly riveting, so they had to do something to try and make it more interesting to those individuals who tuned in because of Ross or tuned in because they just happened to be channel hopping. But when you see that awful drill that Ross went through that I think was supposed to be some light relief, it just didn't work for me. John Thompson had far too much screen time compared to both Jimmy and David, and there was an awful lot of neglect, shall we say, on at least two of the actors who are no longer with us, that being John Lemessurier and James Beck. I don't think James Beck was mentioned more than once throughout the entire programme. But yeah, on the whole, it certainly was good to see Dad's Army back on primetime, and something new as well, and it's good to see the BBC invest in celebrating what is certainly a very large landmark for the programme. What I thought was much better was the Comedy Connections programme that was shown, must have been a couple of weeks or so ago now. Now, that was a late night programme and is part of a series that the BBC are doing. They're doing Comedy Connections and Drama Connections. And for those of you not in the UK and don't get access to see that programme, very briefly, they take a look at a particular programme that's broadcast and then trace the links that programme has with either other programmes or other actors in those programmes, if that makes sense, and they kind of visualise it by producing a tube train map. Now again, I'm aware that I'm explaining that to non-UK individuals, and I'm talking about the UK tube map, but if you can picture a local or a very colourful transport service map, there with just pictures of David and Jimmy and Ian and Clive and Arthur and so on throughout the entire network, then you probably get the idea. Now, I think this programme was completely different in tone. I mean, yes, it was a very different format. It was talking heads. It was meant to be almost a documentary, whereas the Jonathan Ross show was very clearly supposed to be a pseudo-celebration. But it was great to hear Jimmy and David talk at length. For me, there was a couple of new anecdotes that I hadn't heard before. Pamela Cundell, I'm convinced, despite being a fantastically wonderful lady, has only got one story. She says it no matter who interviews her or when she's interviewed. But she says it with such relish and such belief each time that it's difficult not to be completely endeared by her. But yeah, I thought that programme was considerably better, and if you hadn't had a chance to see that, then I suggest that you try and root around and see if you can find it from somewhere. The Dad's Army Appreciation Society have a copy of the Jonathan Ross show. I'm not too certain whether or not they have a copy of Comedy Connections, but perhaps that's something you can try and find out, either through their website, which is dadsarmy.co.uk, or you can email them at info@dadsarmy.co.uk. If you had a different opinion of either of those two programmes, then please let me know. james@dadsarmypodcast.com is the usual email address, and I hope to read out some of your comments on a future podcast.
Have you logged on to the Perry and Croft forum yet? Well, if you are a fan of Jimmy Perry and David Croft's programmes and you haven't taken a look, then you are missing out. But don't panic. You can still join the thriving online community who discuss every conceivable aspect of Dad's Army, Urang Milord, Heidi High, and many others at perryandcroft.co.uk and click on the link to the forum.
Now for our review of Is There Honey Still for Tea? This is one of my favourite episodes, I have to say. The scene in the bank in the early part of the episode when Mannering gets his new paper door always makes me smile. I'm smiling about it whilst I'm talking about it now even. Please let us know what you think of Paul and Tony's review. You can send your comments to me at james@dadsarmypodcast.com and I'll make certain that they receive them. And in the meantime, I shall hand you over to Paul.
Thanks, James. This is Paul Carpenter here from the Dad's Army Appreciation Society, and I'm sitting alongside Tony Terran, also from the Society.
Hello.
And we're going to do a review of Episode 3 from Series 8, which is There Honey Still for Tea? And this is from 1975. To me, this episode always seems to be from one of the earlier series. I don't know whether it's the way it's been written or not, but I'm always surprised when it's Series 8.
I think I agree with you on that one, Paul, yes.
This is one of the episodes that the Society, in the early days, were always getting contacted about because people were always used to confuse this with Battle of Godfrey's Cottage, and we always used to put out messages about saying missing episodes, and people used to think about, oh, I did see one, I have seen, I've got a recording of it, do you want a recording of it, it's in colour. And we had to tell, what's it about? We had to explain. The episode is about, people used to come back, that's when Godfrey's going to lose his cottage. For years before the missing episode was ever found, we kept getting false leads about when people just send in tapes and say, this is, I found the lost episode, you know, blah, blah, blah. The episode starts off in the bank, and we've got Pike sitting there, pretty silent to start with, scratching right in his ledger with his pen, and there's Wilson sitting there, obviously holding his head, obviously he's got some sort of headache. We don't really find out why he's got a headache, do we?
No, we don't, no.
Whether he's had a night on the town or something.
Pike certainly takes advantage of the situation and keeps scribbling away.
He's oblivious, isn't he? He's obviously never been drunk himself, has he?
No, that's right.
And then we get some sort of interaction between them about him not doing anything quietly. And obviously Pike's getting a bit annoyed about this and sets some rules, doesn't he?
That's right. And I think possibly at this point we get a hint about Wilson staying overnight, don't we?
Yeah, another hint there about Wilson and Mrs. Pike. Obviously goes right over Pike's head again. So anyway, he sets the rules and that's it. So Mannering comes in into the bank and is followed by a door.
My name is Glittering Gold Letters. Can't wait to put it in its rightful place. On the door of my office.
Yes, well, it is rather a plain door, isn't it?
Oh, that isn't the actual door.
Oh.
The door's inside. I probably put that case on to protect the panel.
Oh, I see.
I mean, that wouldn't give me, manager of the bank, a plywood door. Do use your intelligence sometimes, Wilson. Right, take the paper off.
What paper? This is the door.
This made of paper?
That's right. Tar paper, to be exact. Standard government issue to replace doors in bombed offices.
I can't screw my nameplate onto a paper door.
You could stick it up.
We have the false door because of the bomb damage. And goes back to an earlier series. Well, the bank was bombed. The main protagonist here is the joiner, who's played by the fantastic Gordon Peters. He obviously starts to assemble the door.
And tar paper door.
Tarred paper door. Nothing to it, it's just a frame with a bit of paper on it, I think. There's a lovely bit with Pike leaning across the counter, trying to get a better look, and Mannering just dismisses him with his right hand.
That's right. I think he's flabbergasted when he sees the door, isn't he? And obviously he's expecting a lot more from the delivery. But obviously Gordon Peters really does put him down as well. First thing Mannering notices, they say that there's holes in the door. The stamp paper makes an appearance,
of course.
And is stuck over the holes.
So anyway, that over, will they go into the office?
I think Mannering's talking to Wilson about him looking like Anthony Eden, isn't he? And whether he should be getting his hair cut, and, his sort of general appearance, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a recurring theme, this Wilson having to go at Wilson about his appearance and the Anthony Eden bit, because he must have a bit of a chip on his shoulder about that somewhere down the line. And it's just then when Mannering catches sight of the door burning.
After Pike, I think, said that the Colonel's outside, wasn't he? And obviously the Colonel's got his cigarette against the door.
So, with a flash, Super Pike goes up, drinks some water and spurts it through the gap, both sides of the door, and in the process he seems to cover, I don't know if it's intentional, but he covers the Colonel with water and the Mannering as well, which is quite good. And of course the Colonel's very pleased about his efficiency here. Well done, young lad, I think he says.
Get some praise,
so he's very proud of that fact. So, the Colonel reveals it's bad news about Godfrey.
About Godfrey? Oh dear. You're not going to say that he can't stay with the platoon. I know Godfrey's getting on, but he's very useful to us. And he's become a sort of father figure for the younger ones to lean on.
Yeah, as long as they don't lean on him too heavily.
I mean emotionally. when the bullets start flying, you won't find Godfrey throwing himself into a funk hole.
Certainly not quickly. No, he's not with his his rheumatics.
But don't worry, it's nothing to do with his being in the Home Guard. He lives at Cherry Tree Cottage, doesn't he?
That's right, yes.
Yes, of course. It's a lovely old place, yes. A cottage with a thatched roof, a white fence, hollyhocks and roses growing in the garden. You know, it really does look like a picture of a chocolate box. You know, whenever I pass by there, I have to stop and say to myself, well, that's it, I suppose. That's what we're fighting for.
I couldn't have put it better myself.
But it is what we're fighting for. But it's got to come down.
What? Come down?
Yes, a new aerodrome's being built in Godfrey's cottage.
I mean, the Colonel doesn't stay for very long, does he, really?
No, he doesn't.
He says this, and as he leaves, he says, oh, he doesn't even turn around to say goodbye, does he? Just open the door and out he goes, which is a bit strange. But,
that's right.
Maybe a problem with the prop, really. Because obviously, a bit later on, the door handle comes off, so there must be some issue there. He was a bit more concerned about getting out without ruining the gag that's coming up, I think.
Yes.
So obviously the Colonel goes, and then Pike tries to come in, door handle comes off, as you'd expect, and would you do that? Would you do what he did after with that? Put your hand right through the door? I don't think anyone would do that, to be honest.
No.
Seems a bit far-fetched. And
but perhaps that's what we would expect of Pike.
But it's so far up the door.
Yes.
I mean, I would put my hand right next to the handle,
yes.
I don't know about you, and then just reach in and turn it open that way. But he puts it up about head height, and reaches in and gets it.
To maximise the joke.
I think Pike's really pleased of it, but obviously Mannering isn't. Quite a bit of a coincidence. Jones is in the bank, paying in some takings, so Mannering doesn't know what to do, and then Wilson suggests he lend the money from the bank for Godfrey.
Which doesn't sit easy with Mannering, does it?
Not too happy about anything to his own money. We've had this before as well in other episodes, where lending himself money.
That's right.
So doesn't mix business with pleasure, even though he's part of it soon.
No. I think in the meantime, obviously, Jones has tried to get in the door. The door's stuck. He decides to put his shoulder to it with disastrous consequences. That's right.
And it's about a second after that we see Pike trying to stick the door back together again with stamps. So the group of them now sitting together in Mannering's office. Pike comes up with another film title, Ghost Goes West. Robert Donut, wasn't it, or something? And following this, we get a nice little scene there, just between the Fraser and Jones.
So they keep veering off the point.
They do.
Yeah.
Nice, some location footage now. This was taken on the pathway leading up to Territory Cottage, which is East Wreatham, I think.
Yes.
Up near Thetford, and a place called the Lost Nurseries. This is where it was filmed on location. And I think they spent about 2 or 3 days there. We went to visit the place and we were talking to the owner. So it's a nice little place. It hasn't changed that much, really.
No.
Has it? I mean, the lane's a little bit wider, I think.
Mm. I mean, they certainly had to dress the cottage up at the time. So
yes.
The garden displays, didn't they?
That's it. When we were there, they had that well, I think.
Yes.
The prop well was still knocking around that they put in the garden. You could just about see it in the programme, but it's just basically a bit of cardboard, I think. And if you notice, when they first arrive at the gate, you see Godfrey trimming the hedge or something, or playing with his roses, and you see the window in the background. And of course, this is supposed to be a thatched cottage, isn't it? But they're very careful not to film above the windows, because in fact it's not thatched at all, is it? It's just a common garden cottage. And it's not very picturesque, is it, really, the cottage itself?
No, it's quite plain.
But this is all TV.
But it's quite interesting to see that the table and the chairs were obviously removed from the cottage and taken into the garden, which it would have been done in those days.
That's right, and they weren't prop chairs. Actually, they belonged to the owner. He was saying that they just dragged a few more chairs out, and I think it was his table. I think they used everything within the cottage for location shooting, so
that's
none
right.
of its props, which is a bit unusual, but it's nice, I suppose,
that's
in
right.
some respects.
That's right, and we visit this cottage, didn't we, Paul, in 2006, I think.
That's right.
That was the first time we'd actually...
First time we'd been there, yeah, because the guy wasn't very...
Keen.
Amenable, very keen to have people visit.
That's right.
And when we were there, we couldn't stop him chatting, could we?
He was very welcoming.
Very welcoming.
We struggled to get away, didn't we?
We didn't get jam and bread and jam and sit around the table, unfortunately.
But he did tell us a story about when they were all gathered there, and apparently it was announced Clive Dunn had got his OBE.
Mm. After that announcement, Clive Dunn wasn't very popular, was he?
No.
And he got a feeling that everyone was a bit icy towards him, because obviously everyone had done the same, was in the same program, and why hadn't they got OBEs? Right. That was a feeling. And why did Clive Dunn suddenly get it amongst all the others? Yeah, so more and more pressure is piled upon Mellering, English Country Garden. This English Country Garden is reflected in the music that was played over, isn't it?
Yes.
Obviously, we see Pike stuffing his face during wartime, and the rationing, obviously, he's trying to get as much food in as possible, really take advantage of the food. Yeah. Bread and jam and butter, that's obviously right. All stuff that's rationed sugar. Upside down cakes a lot. And of course, finally, this cottage stands for England. That's enough, Mannering, it can't take any more. So, obviously, very bravely, he says to God, I've got something to tell you, and he dumps it on Wilson. Nothing gained at all.
The bad news wasn't imparted in any way, and then they walked down the lane, didn't they?
Walked back down that pretty lane.
Right.
Probably shot, I would imagine, at the same time as they shot
walking
to the lane. So the sun's in the same place.
Yeah. With Pike pretending to shoot everything inside.
Indeed. Yeah. Playing games. Obviously, they're on patrol. It's Fraser and Jones sitting together. And it's quite obvious the fact that Mannering has told Jones, it's down to them as their equals, to tell Godfrey about what's happening. So Mannering pushing the problem away from Wilson further down the line. Clive Dunn makes a little bit of slip up there, whether it's intentional or not, when he calls the platoon a platine.
That's right.
And he corrects himself quite quickly about being saying it's a quick slip of the tongue.
Godfrey appears and Fraser comes straight out with it. He said, Godfrey, Jones has got some bad news to tell you.
And off he goes.
Off he goes.
Runs away. I've got a patrol down to the end of the promenade, and off he goes. Now this leaves Jonesy chatting to Godfrey, and it's very clear, although Godfrey's good intentions, he offers to have Godfrey live with him, doesn't he?
That's right.
After a while, but obviously this is not before we find out that Jones is trying to attack
him. I think Jonesy's obviously quite prepared to tell Godfrey, in part for his loyalty to Captain Mannering as well, isn't he?
I think so, yeah. I mean, he's got nothing to lose, really. Very tactful, and he bites the bullet, and it appears that Godfrey knows about it already.
But I think Jonesy obviously does that out of compassion and perhaps maybe some companionship for himself.
Mm. But I can't see that Godfrey would have moved away from his sisters that easily. His sisters live with friends.
That's right.
Live with their friends
and
as well.
And he's lived with his sisters, as I mentioned earlier, I think, for donkey's years.
A little team. You know,
that's right.
And I suppose this sort of thing happened all over the country. The property.
Yes.
People had to vacate or give up for the army. People just moved out. So, yeah, a little bit of history in the background of this. It's obviously based on a bit of truth. Things did happen. So, of course, next we see Fraser on the phone, and it's very late in the evening.
I think he's sitting at the bottom of the stairs with his candle on during the blackout. Certain Fraser wouldn't be looking to put any lights on anyway, because of how tight he is with money.
I mean, the blackouts could be thin as well, couldn't
they? That's right, of course. He's on the phone, makes a trunk call via the operator to the man from the ministry, one Sir Charles Renfrew McAllister.
Yeah, and his part was played by Campbell Singer, previous Series 5, played another Scot, Major General Menzies. So he reappeared again, under a different name. Just going back to If the Cat Fits, right at the end of that particular episode, when Fraser's having a go at Mannering, he actually calls the character by his real name, rather than General Menzies.
Yes.
Renfrew McAllister, he's amazed he gets a phone call this time of day.
He's obviously in bed, isn't
he? Night.
That's right. Part of the reason he's making this call at night is because it's cheaper.
Quite out of character for Fraser to do this. Because he's always a bit of a troublemaker, so because he didn't come to tea with Mannering and Wilson and Pike, right. And also he wasn't that interested in helping Jonesy, he's the problem of telling him. And suddenly now he's on the phone to somewhere, you know, he must have picked up in the back of his mind somewhere he knew this person.
That's right.
And he's being very helpful, which is, you know, it seems at odds with another part of the episode.
Mm. Almost come out of the blue, this scene, doesn't it? Mm. So nothing leading up to it.
Yeah, and obviously Fraser's got something on this person, prepared to spill the beans. To a certain society magazine. Obviously he's changed his ways since then. Now he's a man of power.
He ends up calling him Charlie Boy, doesn't he?
Charlie Boy. The last scene, back on location again, we see the platoon in uniform. There's not much uniform in this one, is there, really?
No.
We see a quick glance of Fraser and Jones trying to tell Godfrey. And the only other part of the platoon in uniform is at the cottage, isn't
That's
it?
That's right.
Quite a few episodes are a bit like, mostly in civvies. A late series, most people understand which.
That's right.
It's not an army related type of episode, this one. It's more interaction between the characters.
And obviously, we're there with both fans, Jones's fan and Hodges' fan. And at this point, obviously, Warden Hodges makes his first appearance of the episode. And obviously, he's only there for the money.
He is, yes, £2.
£2.
£2 to do the job.
That's right. And he's demanding money up front.
Fraser arrives in his beautiful Rolls Royce hearse, by the look of it.
That's right.
Isn't it? With a Mr. Blackhall from the town council, who gives the good news that the aerodrome's not going to be built over Gookers Cottage.
It's going to be moved 200 yards further north.
Just on the edge.
So the cottage will be just on the edge.
Just on the edge. Which is a good thing, and I think Jones is even happy. He's the happiest of everybody
yes,
at last.
Yes.
You know? He was obviously worried about having Godfrey living with him. So he's so pleased, he goes rushing off to tell him. Oh, he can listen to the Forces programme again, can't he?
That's right, he can have his independence.
And cheese on toast.
That's right, even though he hadn't lost it.
He hasn't started. He must have been playing on his mind quite a bit.
So obviously then the platoon proceed to unload the vans.
And again,
Hodges is worried he's not going to get payment.
I love the little scene with Hodges at the end where he's, I want my money. Just going, come away. You imagine Hodges jumping up and down. It'll only be paid if the job has done. It has not been done. That was fantastic. Nice little end there to the episode. You know, you think that would be the end of it, but we get a little scene at the end of a payoff, don't we?
That's right, and they're obviously all sitting around the table having tea again. Quite pleasant. They're all obviously all celebrating the fact.
Whole platoon there,
yes,
aren't they? So, I mean, yes. They've obviously filmed at the same time they're on location, so they obviously had to change. From the Cadorian civvies now, aren't they?
That's right.
One wonders how they filmed it. Obviously, filmed it in different order, because obviously, when they're in civvies, they obviously filmed that bit there when Mannering and Pike and Wilson were still in their civvy clothes, and obviously, it all changed together.
That's right.
For the uniform for the loading the van sequence. Before we come to right to the end, this Fraser backs Mannering up, doesn't he?
Yes.
He says, yes. You know, he doesn't take credit for it at all.
No.
Again, which is quite
unusual.
Different.
I suppose I found it quite odd in that we've all of a sudden got this windy situation where one assumes the aerodrome hasn't even been built yet.
Well, we don't know how long.
That's right.
Can they build an aerodrome? They say it's just been moved, but they must have levelled it pretty quickly.
That's right.
To have aeroplanes coming over. Next thing we know, obviously, the aeroplanes come over.
That's right.
About the wind machine. That was brought up from London, obviously the BBC, by lorry. And the lorry broke down, or the guy was telling us that the unit could only drive a certain amount of time, and because of traffic, this guy had to stay overnight side the road. He'd driven 4 hours or something stupid, it was in those days, and he had to stop driving. And obviously, all the crew had to wait another day before this wind machine arrived.
Yes.
Obviously, they had to pay him another day for filming, he was quite happy. They turned up with the wind machine, and when they turned it on, the wind machine blew away. And they had to try and devise ways of chaining this, it was so powerful, it was a huge machine, apparently, and they had to devise ways of locking this machine, it's only for a short sequence.
Yes.
But it literally blew everything away, and because it was so powerful, they wanted to turn it on really, really quietly, so it got a bit of a breeze, and they did things like attaching wires to Mannering's hat, bits of clothing, the tablecloth, bits on the cutlery and everything on the tablecloth, and they were going to pull all this stuff off to make it look like it was really windy, and I just imagine how that would have looked, really. So they tried all this beforehand. And then they decided, well, we've got to try and strap this thing down to use it so it actually does blow like a real gale. And so they managed to, I think they all laid down the wind machine base, and they put bricks and bits of concrete down. And eventually, when they turned it on, they managed to do the sequence, but they had to be very quick about it. They had other problems as well filming there, because they were doing the harvest, and the combine harvester in the next field was going up and down, and the farmer refused to stop.
That's right, yeah.
And so they had to wait for this combine harvester, and of course all the dust from the field was blowing over. It wasn't a particularly good bit of location filming for them.
No.
I think it was frustrating, and it probably cost a lot more than... I think they paid him off. I think they paid off
the farmer, didn't they?
Yeah. And these sort of information we picked up just by visiting the guy. And I enjoyed the episode, so as is usual for one of these podcasts, we've got to give it a vote. It seemed to be over very quickly. I'm going to give it... No, you go first.
I think I'll score a 4.
Me too. I'll give it a 4, because it's some lovely lines. I love the bit with Gordon Peters, is always excellent.
Yes.
Wherever he appears in Gordon Peters. He was in the first episode ever filmed as a fireman, apparently. And, of course, that sequence is available in the script books. Some of the script that ended up on the cutting room floor, and Jimmy and David promised Gordon to, we'll give you parts in the future, on little parts here and there. And true to their word, Gordon appears a few times, lighthouse keeper. So you are going to give it 4 as well. Almost a landmark episode. So there you have it. So I hope you enjoyed that. I hope you've got some little bits of tidbits of what happened in the background.
from the making of Is the Honey Still Petite?
You are kidding, Mr. Hitler, if you think old England's
done. Well, that's it for podcast 27. I shall speak to you again the other side of fatherhood. In other words, I have absolutely no idea when I'm going to be able to record a full podcast. If I receive some pre-recorded material, then I may be able to issue some mini-casts over the next couple of weeks or so. We'll just have to wait and see how things go. And in the meantime, keep on watching Dad's Army, and I hope you keep enjoying it. And feel free to send me an email about any aspect of the programme whatsoever. James@dadsarmypodcast.com. Until next time, goodbye.
You are kidding, Mr. Hitler, if